Late.
Delivery suite, how can I help you? Uh-huh. Mm. And how long ago was that? Oh, dear, I think you'd better come in straight away, love. Grab your hubby and your hold-all. Someone will meet you in reception. Now, don't panic. There's a good girl. Bye-bye.
Quick, I need help. I think our waters are broken.
Oh, dear. All right, calm down, sir. Eileen, get a mop and sort out room 9. Our prospective father's in quite a tiz. Mary, get room 7 ready for occupancy, would you, dear? I'll get you some paracetamol, then we'll check how dilated you are. If it's all going to plan and it gets too much for you, then we'll try some of the harder stuff, OK? Or consider an epidural.
Oh, yes, yes.
We'd like to apologise to customers travelling tonight. This train will be running late due to speed restrictions on this section of the line.
So how come the corporate hospitality of my estimable company doesn't stretch to a taxi to get me home? How come they make me spend £200 on a dress that makes me look like my mother and then dump me on the last train back? God, this lot look unsavoury. Oh, please, you two. Doesn't your mother have a sofa where you can do that? You know, I think I'm suffering from some kind of post-traumatic stress. 8 hours in a marquee with 50 marketing people and their top-performing salesmen. It's a bit they don't tell you about on the MBA course.
Ooh. At the next station, this train will divide. There will then be a delay. This is due to staff shortages.
Is this seat free?
Oh, yes, yes, that seat's free. Come on, most of the train's free. All right, you don't have to sit that far away. Perhaps he thinks I'm a lesbian. What lesbian would ever dress like this? Come to think of it, what woman outside the 1950s would dress like this? Can you believe that I'm actually wearing a slip? So, where has she come from then? Late night train. Back from visiting friends? Oh, well, she's got a laptop. Okay. Okay, she's up from the country for work tomorrow. Ah, yes, yes, up from the converted coach house she shares with her sensitive and caring husband, who's a doctor. She's up for a business meeting with her publisher. She writes travel books. Or book reviews for the Sunday supplements. No, she's researching a biography of Vanessa Burke.
This is balmy. I cannot go on taking late-night trains halfway across the country to earn a couple of quid more than the train fare. I don't even enjoy teaching anymore, particularly not evening classes. And marketing, it's not a real subject, is it? It's not like physics or history or engineering. So I'd rather be an engineer, is that what I'm saying? No. It's just that right now, I think I'd rather be her. That woman over there. The one in the frock. I love that frock and the hat. I've always wanted to dress like that, sort of floaty and feminine. But you can't, can you? You can't stand up in front of a bunch of students and explain demographic trends in the processed cheese market in a pink hat. So where do you get a job where you can dress up like that?
She's a lawyer on sabbatical in the early stages of pregnancy. Second child. Got into interior decoration when she was pregnant with the first. Made a marvellous job of the coach house in Wiltshire, and whilst doing it, she developed an interest in domestic furniture of the Jacobean period. And now she's researching the life of an Italian cabinet maker who settled in Wiltshire in 1635. He was mysteriously killed in what was thought at the time to be a cabalistic rite.
She's a lawyer. Lives in London, keeps a weekend place in the country. Works in employment law, ethically good stuff. A woman with principles. Defends the underdog. Lives in a huge loft in Docklands, or maybe Shoreditch. Minimalist interiors. And the frock. Okay, she's married to an architect. He designs museums. She's on her way back from a party to celebrate the opening of something caring that he's done for
the biography turned out to be a novel. The Guardian loved it. A work of great intelligence and depth, the review said. Startling insights into the world view of 17th century women. So now she's got a profile. She's a fresh new voice in contemporary fiction. Next month, she'll be featured as one of 10 talents to watch. In a 12-page colour spread in the British edition of Vanity Fair.
She works in an old printing works. Another minor architectural miracle from her husband. The look is distressed industrial and was recently described as visionary by the architecture critic of The Guardian. Her office overlooks the Thames.
Her office overlooks the hills to the small coastal village where many of her very talented friends also live. Inside, on the desk, a few objects of breathtaking elegance, placed with great reverence. Just catching a glance of that small applewood bowl is enough to convince you that there is a god.
She's got a lover as well as the husband. He's a furniture designer from Italy.
The photos on the wall of the mountains, they're taken by her lover, who now lives in Spain.
She meets up with the lover when she goes to the country, when her husband is away. They stay in a small hotel in Wiltshire, an old coaching inn. She feels no guilt.
He comes to stay sometimes, her lover, and they go for long walks on the beach. When her husband's away in the summer, they stay out for the night and sleep on the sand. She feels no guilt. She's got my life, hasn't she?
She's got my life. I distinctly remember putting in an order for that life.
There's been a mix-up somewhere. That should be me over there.
I wonder if I can claim compensation.
You know, in some African tribes, the expectant mother ties one end of a length of rope around her wrist and the other around her husband's testicles, then sends him outside the hut. And every time she has a contraction, the rope pulls hard and he gets to share the pain. Mind you, he can't really see what's going on. I bet she's tempted to just sit there, pulling it all the time, contractions or no contractions. I know I would. Serve him right. Come on, Carol. You're doing brilliantly. Superb pushes. The head's crowning. Come on, yes. Now give us another one. You can do it. Deep breath and push for England. Yes. Yes, it's a boy. Tiny little thing, goodness. According to my grandmother, in her grandmother's day, if they were very small, they were tossed to the end of the bed, just discarded, left to grow cold, alone under the covers like an old hot water bottle. She told me her Uncle Sid was tossed, left for dead. Then his older brother, her Uncle Bob, thought he saw the little mite breathing, fighting for its life. So he wrapped up the little tot in a towel and crept unnoticed outside with his pitiful bundle, leaving the rest of the family sobbing and wailing. Once there, he fed it some chocolate he'd been saving for the right occasion. Must have done the trick. Uncle Sid lived till he was 89. Admittedly, his teeth had all rotted away, but then he never did outgrow his penchant for sugary treats.
This interview is timed at 2:08 a.m. Present are myself, Detective Inspector Nash, and the suspect, Graham Arthur Warren. Now, about your alibi, Mr. Warren, let's go through it one more time, shall we?
Oh, we've already been through it four times.
Well, we're going to go through it again. You told us you've never been to Reading.
I haven't.
We've been looking through some back issues of the Reading Post. Look at this page here. February the 27th, 1978, just under this Spot the Ball competition. That's you there. You're red circled in white. This week's mystery shopper.
I don't see how that proves anything. Lots of people are mystery shoppers. Anyway, this is 12 years before the alleged crime.
It's all part of the jigsaw, Mr. Warren. And speaking of jigsaws, look at this one of the Flying Scotsman. Who's that poking their head out of the window three carriages back?
But that's a painting.
A painting of you, Mr. Warren.
Lots of people appear in paintings of the Flying Scotsman holding a Labrador.
I never mentioned a Labrador. Huh. Coincidentally, the very same breed of dog that was found shoved down the throat of your estranged wife.
You'll never get that Labrador to stand up in court. And besides, it's a different colour.
I don't think you're taking into account the honey-coloured paint shortage of 1979, the pigment war as it was known.
Is any of this relevant?
All right, then, let's get back to your alibi for the night in question. We've got three witnesses that saw you assault a wallaby in Derbyshire.
You can't pin those wallabies on me.
What you don't realise, Mr. Warren, is that one of those wallabies was a plainclothes officer.
Susan!
Yes, Susan. And it was Susan you were dancing with at the Southampton Football Club Player of the Year Award. And what you thought was the Tivoli Ballroom was actually a peanut in milk.
You've thought of everything, haven't you?
Not quite everything, Mr. Warren. There's still one thing that doesn't make sense.
Should I ring her? If I'm being sensible, of course, the answer's no. That's what my friends will say. Don't do it, it's not worth it. I'm sure they would. You know, if they were here. Distraction, that's what I need. Let's see. Why are board games always for at least two people? If you've got two people, you don't need a board game. Oh, hang on a minute, of course. Solo Scrabble. I haven't played that for ages. Brilliant. Brilliant. I'm perking up already. Okay, my go. Now let's see what letters I get. Oh, I love this bit. The expectation before the... let's not be too hasty. PSXYBLN. PSXYBCYBLN. I wonder if that means something in another language. Could do, couldn't it? Like goddess, or angel face, or bitch woman. I wonder if she's playing solo Scrabble. If she is, I bet she's got better letters than me. She'll be on her own, I'm sure. She wouldn't have friends around on a Friday night. Not when she's all tired from work. She's probably lying on the sofa. Jacket and boots thrown off in the hall, tights in a messy ball on the carpet with her legs stretched out and her long brown hair almost reaching the floor. Of course, she might be wanting me to ring. She might be waiting by the phone, wondering why I haven't. Might be blaming herself for hanging up last time. Oh, I'd hate that. I don't want her feeling sorry for me. For some reason, her number seems to be particularly easy to remember. It just seems to sit there in front of my eyes, whether they're open or shut. Which is weird, really. Giving up smoking was a bad idea. Cancer or no cancer. If I hadn't, at least there'd be some in the house. I wouldn't have to smoke them. I could just touch them. I mean, we should be allowed some pleasure in our lives, even if it's not, you know. She'll probably be going to bed soon, getting all cosy, putting on her gym jams. Maybe I could just ring to say night night. Oh god, it's hot tonight. Must be like a furnace in that little flat. Well, not long to go till I'm ready for bed. And then that'll be one more whole day I've got through. Which is an achievement, by anyone's standards. Well done, me. It's weird to think of not doing something as an achievement, isn't it? Pathetic, really, when you think about it. I mean, life was meant to be about doing things, being active, doing what the hell you want to do. I mean, what is there to gain by not doing something? Especially when, you know, you're just going to want to do it just as badly tomorrow. Why sustain the agony when ecstasy is just around the corner? Life is for living. I feel more alive already. Oh, I'm tingling all over.
Hello? Hello? Look, who is this? Hello? Who is this?
Performers:
Paul Merton, Mira Sayal, Julian Clary, Richard Wilson, Julie Ballou, Tilly Vosborough.
Writers:
Mandy Wheeler, Tilly Vosborough, Julie Ballou, Rob Colley, Paul Merton.
Music:
Robert Katz.
Production:
Rex Brough, Linda Cobley, Sarah Parkinson.